Welcome to The Final Word, a Bible teaching ministry with pastor, teacher, and author Jim Andrews. The Final Word is grounded on the invincible conviction that what the Bible teaches, God teaches. And that is the last word. On this program, truth still matters. The Bible is in, Babel is out. The Final Word is funded by listeners like you. Should you want to partner with us or want other information about the program, please go to our website at thefinalwordradio.com. There you'll find archives so you can listen to any program you may have missed. Visit us on our social media platforms at The Final Word Radio and write us a note. We love hearing from our listeners. We'll provide other contact information at the end of the program, so have your pen ready. And now Jim Andrews continues his current study of God's Word.
Good day, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for joining us on The Final Word. We continue our exposition of the Gospel of John. We're closing in on the end. We've now come to John chapter 21. Our Lord has been raised from the dead, and we have all the accounts surrounding that. John has summarized what his purpose has been in proclaiming the words and works of Jesus. Many other signs, therefore, Jesus also performed in the presence of his disciples, the resurrection being the climax. These have not been written in this book, but these particular ones have been written so that you may believe that Jesus is the Christ. He's the Messiah. He is the Son of God in the fullest sense of the term, and the believing you may have life in his name. Now, in chapter 21, we read, first verse, after these things, Jesus manifested himself again to the disciples at the Sea of Tiberias, and he manifested himself in this way. If chapter 21 seems perhaps anticlimactic after the famous summation of John's purpose at the end of chapter 20, it isn't. For 20 chapters, we have had the ongoing revelation of Jesus Christ, narrated by John, climaxing in this ultimate sign, the sign of the prophet Jonah, as Jesus once put it, rising from the dead after 3 days. Now, in chapter 21, the Lord manifests himself once more to 7 of his disciples, who by now have returned to Galilee after the Feast of Unleavened Bread. For the moment, their lives are on hold. They have no specific direction about what they should do next. They are in one of those zones in life where we know or sense that where we have just been is distinctly the past, but the future is not clear. It's one of those zones they were in, we've all experienced it, where we're waiting for God's direction, and it's just an awkward time. If the first part of chapter 1 was a prologue, this chapter may fitly be termed the epilogue. So far, John's gospel has been about the revelation of God's Son. Now, in the epilogue, the major theme is the mission of Christ's servants. This chapter just pulsates with symbolism that we'll take note of as we move along in our exposition of the text. The initial account is an enacted parable whose significance we will attempt to draw out. Verse 1 begins the description of the third of 3 post-resurrection encounters that John has chosen to record. The setting is the Sea of Tiberias. It's better known to us as the Sea of Galilee. Tiberias was a Roman city, located about halfway down the western shore, seen it a number of times. Almost every tourist has been there and sailed these days on what is called a Jesus boat to Capernaum on the north shore. There were together there Simon Peter and Thomas, called Didymus, the word means the twin. Beyond that, we do not know the significance. And Nathanael of Cana in Galilee, and the sons of Zebedee, James and John, and 2 others of his disciples. John does not mention that 7 were there, had that number had a symbolic value to John. Knowing John, he most likely would have called attention to it rather than just leave it for the reader to do the math. Well, Peter was not going to sit around twiddling his thumbs in this interlude, this awkward transition. Until he had further instructions, he was determined to do what he knew and what he had always done until the Lord called them. Luke chapter 5, verses 1 through 11. Simon Peter said to his friends, "Well, I tell you what, as I paraphrase lightly, guys, I'm going to go fishing." They said to him, "Well, we'll go with you." And they went out and got into the boat, and that night they caught nothing. In this 50-day interregnum, when Jesus was no longer physically present with them, but appeared to his disciples only intermittently, confirming his resurrection, they did not yet have their orders, and life for them, as I suggested earlier, was temporarily on hold. They knew whom they served, but it was not clear to them at this point what shape or direction that service was to take. So in a sense, it seems that they returned to their familiar surroundings. It's kind of natural for all of us. On this occasion, as they fellowshiped together, Peter decided to do something rather than nothing. "I'm going fishing." The other guy says, "Sounds like a good idea to us. We'll go with you." Now, folks, I think there's a lesson here for all of us in similar situations. When for some reason we know that the past is the past and the future is undecided, that's the kind of circumstance I'm talking about. Some folk in that circumstance, I've seen it many times in students finishing seminary, for example. They have every intent of serving the Lord all their lives, but nothing has opened up for them. In that circumstance, there's a tendency just to sit around and wait for the phone to ring, so to speak. Or perhaps a person, for some reason, has left one ministry where they are certain, we presume rightly, that their time in that ministry is up, and the Lord took them out of that work, but he has not yet revealed the future yet. Time and again, I have seen such folk wait and wait and do nothing but wait on that letter or phone call to tell them the next thing. Well, what Peter does here is, I think, symbolically consistent with the advice that I have always given folk in that circumstance, and you may be one that needs this advice. I have no idea. I have already recommended to folks who have been holding the line for some time, waiting for the Lord to answer and tell them what is next. I've told them, folks, the Lord favors a moving target. That has been my experience. In that situation, say, "Lord, you know I am ready, and I am willing any time you beckon. But until you show me what to do next, I have to support my family. It seems to me it's unhealthy just to piddle and mope around. So, Lord, what I'm going to do, I propose to do, is to move out and do whatever it is that I know how to do, or whatever it is that is open to me, until you direct me otherwise. In other words, my advice is keep moving and let the Lord find you." Maybe the best example of that kind of thing that I'm talking about here is a music pastor I once had on my staff. In some ways, he was very gifted musically, but he had not been on my staff a week until he was making noises about wanting to be a senior pastor. I was shocked. Now, it was entirely possible that the Lord one day might lead him in such a direction, especially if he turned out to have a real heart for God, a bit of leadership, all of which I thought at the time he did have. But by no means was this young fellow ready for any such role when he started dreaming about it. He was absolutely oblivious to the scope of his deficiencies in that regard. But reckoning that one day the Lord could fill the blanks, I told him, "Look, brother, you do believe God called you here to do this work, to be our music director, right? Well, that you know. Right now, why don't you just do what you know God has called you to do? And as you move along in time, it's entirely possible the Lord may show you something else. You see, young man, he prefers a moving target. Don't despise and neglect your gift, letting down on the job while you hope and wait for a voice in the night to call you to a senior pastorate." I told him, just go fishing, to use the metaphor that we have here, and the Lord will find you. Do what God gives you to do at the moment, and do it, son, with all your might. And let the Lord find you. Don't take a seat somewhere and demand that he come looking for you. He prefers a moving target, my friends. Just get up and do whatever it is that God gives you to do. Whatever is at hand, whatever you know to do. And I tell you, he will find you whenever he is ready for you to do something else. Now that, and I must clarify this, that is not the symbolic message John intends in this narrative. However, I think it does serve as a good illustration of the course we all need to take in the circumstances I just described. Certainly the providence of God moved Peter to move that day and his associates to follow. And it was, as we will see, in moving rather than moping that they got their direction. That much is clear. What I think is symbolic, however, is the disciples going fishing. That act was an enterprise, which is an enacted parable of their commission. For Jesus called them to be fishers of men. So they embark on their work with skill and determination. They fish through the night, just as we reach out to a sin-darkened world, trying in the Lord's name to catch the lost fish in our nets. In this case, they were unsuccessful. And then, at daybreak, something happens. But when day was now breaking, Jesus, the resurrected Lord, stood on the beach. Yet the disciples did not know that it was Jesus. In this fishing work, we, his servants, are not always, folks, sensitive or alert to the presence of the Lord, just as they weren't here. There he was, but they didn't recognize it. We, as his servants, labor. We toil through the night, catching little or nothing, not knowing that he is there, even in our futility, as well as in our victories, as the Lord was with Moses in his initial failures in Egypt. But he's there setting up circumstances, that's the idea, so that at daybreak he may reveal himself to us in some impressive and life-imprinting way. I've often told this story, and I always use it in connection with Romans chapter 1, verses 16 and 17. If you've heard that study, you've heard this one before, but it was one of those. You know, all along the course of my long ministry, the Lord's done for me what I think he does for all of his servants as he shapes us, as he moves us. He gives us certain signature experiences, and I have a bunch of those, where it was imprinting. It just affected the whole life and course and coloration of my ministry. And this is one of those, where the Lord was present, but I was absolutely clueless at the time. So I'm going to tell you a story about a case where I, in fact, symbolically labored in the night, and I took nothing, so that at daybreak the Lord could reveal to me his presence when I had no idea he was there. And out of futility he brought victory, and my net came to shore full. I'm going to illustrate that. I was in seminary 4 years. It was after my first year. I came home for the summer with my wife, and we were going to spend the summer months there. My pastor was gracious enough to invite me to preach one Sunday. I was really pleased for the opportunity. You're a young seminary, and you think you know more than you know, and you've learned more than you really have. And our church was a preeminently evangelistic church. It had always been, you know, kind of John 3:16, a different version every Sunday. And I was a guy who, more than anything else, just wanted to teach the Bible. And in my youthful pride, I was anxious to get up and show the people how it should be done. You can see trouble coming, can't you? One of my favorite passages is Philippians chapter 2, verses 1 through 12. So I studied, I prepared, and I was armed for bear, so to speak. On Sunday, I showed up and was in the back room with the pastor when one of the deacons came through the door. He was an aggressive, evangelistic type. He said excitedly to me before I went out on the platform, "Brother Jimmy, my brother Bob is here. Jimmy, he doesn't know the Lord. He's never even been in church before. Get him." Well, that amped me up a bit. So I eventually went out, and time came for me to get up and preach, and I got up to teach my passage with passion and with enthusiasm. But I know all this was of God. They weren't used to Bible teaching. They were used to some evangelistic sermon every week, 3 points, at the end of which, as regularly as clockwork, they gave an invitation. Him, people out here tend to call it an altar call. More appropriate name is an invitation. Well, I got about halfway through, and I felt I was stinking up the place. I was looking at the people, and they had the glazed look. I don't know whether they were disappointed or not, probably were, but I was sure disappointed. And I got to the end of that passage. I couldn't wait to get through the morning and get out of there and go hide my head somewhere. But I got to the end of the passage where I had, I thought, an absolute grenade, where it says that at the end every knee shall bow and every tongue will confess that Jesus Christ is Lord. And I really rang the bells on that, and then gave an invitation and saw about what I expected to see. Nothing whatever, not a sign of any movement. And I finished, and the service closed, and I went home. And though it was a small town, I barely came out in a week. I was just so embarrassed at what I did. I went in with such high expectations and knew, and I know this was all of the Lord, knew that I had fallen far short of the power that I expected that message to carry. Well, we got to the next Saturday night. The phone rang, and I picked up the phone, and it was Bill, the deacon who met me in the back of the church, and he said to me, "Brother Jimmy, I got to tell you a story." He said, "You remember my brother Bob?" Oh, how I remembered his brother Bob. He said, "Well, he got saved tonight." Said, "You want to know how?" I make it a point not to lie, but I had to confess. I lied at that point, and I said yes. I really didn't want to know. It just pained me. If this guy was going to come to Christ, Lord, I needed that to happen last Sunday. Why, almost a week later? Well, Bill began to relate. And he said, "Brother Jimmy," said, "Bob is a mine foreman." And he came over to my house, just virtually shaking, and said, "Bill, I've got to be saved. I've got to be saved." And Bill said, "Bob, that is great. But why all this agitation? What brought this on?" He said, "Man, I've been down in that mine all week. I can't eat. I can't sleep. All I can hear is every knee shall bow and every tongue shall confess that Jesus Christ is Lord." That's how it happened, Brother Jimmy. Well, that was wonderful. That was just wonderful. You see, I didn't see the Lord in all of that, but the Lord set it up. I was out there in a metaphor. I was out there, so to speak, fishing all night, and I caught nothing, or so I thought. The Lord was there, as it were, standing on the shore. He had a situation set up to teach me and to make an everlasting imprint upon my ministry. I learned right then and there. If I'd never known it before, right then and there, I understood where the power was located. It was in the Spirit working through the Word. It was nothing in me, because I did absolutely nothing that morning, that I could walk away feeling good about myself. That is the way the Lord works. So sometimes He's standing on the shore of our life while we're out there fishing, and He's doing things so that at daybreak He may reveal Himself to us in some impressive and life-imprinting way. Well, in verse 5, Jesus calls to them, and He says, "Children, you don't have anything to eat, do you?" They answered Him, "No." One can almost hear the embarrassment. These guys were pros, but they'd gotten skunked. They were not in the mood to chatter with a stranger on a shore 100 yards away. Then Jesus said to them, of course they didn't recognize His presence, "Hey, cast your nets on the right side of the boat, and you'll find fish." A good thing about failure, folks, and the sense of futility, is that it has this way of opening people up to other ideas that, for whatever reason, they may not have tried or considered. A little taste of failure can quickly take the starch out of the pros in any line of work, who, in their expertise, sometimes are too cocksure for their own good. And they may have the idea that they know everything there is to know about their line of work, be it some secular field or even the Lord's work. I've seen a lot of people like that in the Lord's work, and young men like I was in that pulpit situation often come in under the illusion that they know everything. And nobody, that's one of their biggest problems. Nobody can tell them that they're not so smart after all. In fact, they're not very smart at all. A little failure, a little exposure to a feeling of futility, it's painful, but it's always good for a servant of God. Still, not knowing that it was the Lord speaking, they must have thought, oh, what the heck, give it a shot. The water's shallow, maybe he knows something we don't. Nothing ventured, nothing gained, heave-ho. So they cast it, and now they were not able to haul it, that is, the net, in for the quantity of fish. What a bonanza of fish, what a catch. It was a real net breaker. This scenario undoubtedly reminded them, and was intentionally, I'm sure, set up by the Lord to do so, reminded them of the time when he called them to become catchers of men. You may remember a similar event in some of their lives described in Luke 5:1-11. An all-night, unsuccessful fishing expedition. They were cleaning their nets, as you may recall. I'm talking about Luke 5. They were preparing their gear for the next night out when Jesus came along the sea teaching. He needed their boat for an improvised pulpit. When he finished teaching, you remember, he told them to cast out into the deep and let their nets down. And when they did so, they took a haul so big it was breaking their nets. Well, on that occasion, Peter was so overwhelmed that he forgot the fish, and he fell down and he worshiped at Jesus' feet. Then the Lord called them to follow him permanently, that, he said, they may become fishers of men. Now here, as the Lord is getting ready to send them out to carry on his ministry in his absence, that is, from earth, he frames his ministry to them with another fish-catching experience. It's intentionally reminiscent of the former, and doubtless before the day is done, he's going to refresh their sense of his original calling, but also he's going to remind them of their need of his knowledge, of his power, and of his direction in the whole endeavor. So this fishing experience here is just a metaphor of that. But you can be certain, as John's rehearsal of it here evinces, it was a thoroughly impressive one. Just because of that, the coincidence of the two, no doubt, hit John, the disciple whom Jesus loved, immediately, that it was the Lord standing on the shore who had directed them. This was, as Yogi Berra said, deja vu all over again. You know, this brings to mind this truth about the ministry and the church and our corporate life together. As I mentioned earlier, the Lord is present many times in situations when we're not conscious of it. Here I mean present in the sense of doing a special work, up to something. Not all believers, however earnest or devout they may be, are equally attuned to that phenomenon. I mean, to some, God, like other spiritual abilities, has calibrated them to better recognize his footsteps in unexpected places and to alert the rest of us, just as John did here among the disciples. John seems to have been that one. Peter became a giant, but it was John who was the first to sense in this situation, I get it. I know what's going on now. It's the Lord in this situation. There he was, standing on the shore. They had not recognized his presence. We'll come back to that thought. We're not finished with it yet. Do that in our next study. Have a great day, friends. A blessed day.
The Final Word is a listener-supported ministry. Should you want to partner with us or want other information about this program, please visit our website at thefinalwordradio.com. Our postal address is The Final Word, 4565 Carmen Drive, Lake Oswego, Oregon, 97035. Our email address is info@thefinalwordradio.com. Our phone number is 503-699-9840. If this program has ministered to you, tell a friend about it. We do solicit your prayers for God's hand upon this outreach.